The title of the new album is Da Da Da. Can you please give us one explanation of what does it mean?
One. Oh, that's very difficult. Normally I give three. Of course, the first is the yes, yes, yes in the Russian. Da 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 is the first words probably a baby can produce. And when you look at the title and you look at the English version of it, then you see that there's a dad, a dad, a dad, a father, a father, a father.
The new record is out soon. Can we hear on it something we haven't heard from the Nits yet?
Yes, you can. I think you can hear 15 songs you haven't heard from Nits yet.
You got me there, yeah. Martin, you are a new guy in the Nits. How did the recording go from your point of view?
Well, it was a very modern studio, everything really up to date and perfect atmosphere, so it was a fantastic experience.
Yeah. So on this new record, you made it in a big studio instead of your own smaller studio.
48-track digital studio in Holland.
Maria Jatka, ole hyvä.
And here we have Robert Jan. You're the keyboard player. Wouldn't it be very different without the computer technology?
Yes and no.
Explain.
Well, of course, we would sound different, but like the point of the song will always be clear, even if it was only with a guitar.
And you, Peter, you're also a new member in the band. Do you bring with Martin new ideas?
I hope so. They ask us, so they probably want us to give something to the band, and I hope we do.
Dial Nits, a podcast about the Dutch band Nits. A celebration of five decades of sophisticated music from the Netherlands. Your host, Erik Fakon.
Ik ben Martin Bakker, tenminste dat is mijn naam. I played double bass and bass guitar for the Nits from 1991. Till 1994.
No. Longer.
Longer?
Six, yeah.
That's 1996. My friend Peter corrected me.
Hello, I'm Peter Murris. I played in that period. And Martin also joined the band. Percussion, violin, sometimes even bass when Martin was playing the mandolin, he didn't mention. Originally, I'm a drummer.
You entered the band in 1991. During the ping-ting period.
The ting period.
Yeah. And, well, it sounds so classically Chinese, doesn't it?
Yeah. Wow. The ting period.
Maybe that was the whole idea.
Yeah. How was it for you as musicians to enter an outfit that was sort of like this unity of three people?
It was a very strange entry because they were working with a classical orchestra at the moment when I arrived to start with, and I cannot read music. So the first thing we actually had to do was be at a rehearsal of the Nits and the orchestra. And Robert Jan casually asked me, can you join the orchestra and play the parts? I said, no, I can't read notes. Oh, okay. Well, just be in the audience then. That was my first contact practically with the Nits. I've known Robert Jan for a long time before that, so that was different.
Well, I think I entered a little earlier because they invited me to join Rob with the recordings of Ting. So I did like snare drums and all kind of stuff, timpani on the CD. And then I remember when Martin is talking about the performance of Yuvi that Robert Jan wrote for band and orchestra. And, well, I am a kind of classical schooled, so I was with all the other percussion players and Schlagzeuger. So I was next to Rob playing snare drums, all kind of other stuff in that time. Funny, I can't remember that.
No idea what the guys were doing.
I can't remember.
No idea.
There is no need for Martin to be able to read notes because he has very, very good ears and a fantastic sense of time.
Enormous ears.
Yeah, enormous.
You can see that on the podcast.
They reach to the sky. No.
Yeah, but still, back to this question, you know, like you have this sort of unity,
yeah.
And you come along and you have to enter this world.
Yeah. It's never been a problem socially, yeah. Never. No, it's immediately in the group.
Yeah, I knew Rob already really long. We sailed together, made music together before. I knew Hank from recordings with Matilda Santin when they did like backing vocals. And so Rob kind of took me by the arm and took him to his band, you know, and it was not a problem. It was just entering a kindergarten, like instrumental for me, wise, yeah. You know.
It's like me too.
There was a lot of freedom and we could, well, listen really well to each other, what people were doing in the band. So there was no problem. In the beginning, it was a good atmosphere, right?
Yeah, very good. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Yeah, because there was a lot of freedom, musical freedom.
Yeah.
I remember me asking Hank in the beginning, because I was not very sure of myself or the things I played, when we were recording, and I asked Hank if it was good, what I was doing. And the answer he gave me was, it's good because you play it.
Well, that's what I meant, kind of, earlier.
So, it was actually a life-changing moment for me. I thought, oh, yeah, that's another way of looking at it. It does something with your perfectionism, a remark like that.
There was one thing that you used as an expression called kindergarten.
Yeah.
Kindergarten means that children and children are a play.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, that's how it felt to me too.
Yeah, it's a playground. The Werf.
A playground, yeah.
The Werf that burned down, you know, that was such a nice place to just be and play and find out. And last week I saw this picture of Wisseloord when we were recording Da Da Da.
Yeah, yeah.
And I saw this picture of my corner with like all kind of percussion shit and snare drums and cymbals and hand percussion and it was, and I looked at it. I said, "Yeah, well, that's like a kindergarten. I mean, you can just take something in your hand or start playing along with something, and it's just you can try stuff. You know, nice.
Yeah, total freedom, musical freedom. That's what it was.
Yeah,
choices to make. Nobody ever tried to change." What you came up with.
No.
Unless it is yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That moment of self-doubt that you mentioned before.
Yeah, self-doubt all the time. Every second of every day, I doubt myself. That's probably the reason I come up with things. It's the basics of creative energy, I think. It's not an enemy. No, not at all.
Sometimes I was feeling like a homeless boy in a city without hope. City with a joy I found. Just for one day. Sometimes I was feeling like a homeless boy in a city without hope. City without joy.
There are many recordings of the band in those years from 1991 to 96, but only one album. Da 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 is one of those albums that divides opinions. a more traditional album than both Giant Normal Dwarf and Ting. Martin and Peter are unanimous in their judgment.
It's one of the best albums I played on in my career. Well, that says it, eh?
No. Yeah.
Musically, it was very interesting, I thought, and it had a great dynamics. Rhythmically, it was out of this world because we had two drummers. And the two drummers, they have, it's two persons, and they have different opinions. So that's what you hear in the drums, you know, you have a lot of movement. And it's for a bass player's dream to...
Really?
To,
yeah. I thought, he connected it.
Yeah.
I thought you connected the two, because I thought, well, and, how's he going to get in there with two
and
drummers?
I connected it with Robert Young.
Yeah. That was a hell of a job. To just, like... bind the band together, yeah, but that's what he can do, and that's what I'm talking about.
But there were rhythmical conflicts also, and different ideas about how the rhythm should be on the top layers of the musical spectrum, like Robert John and Hank's guitar, you know. Yeah. And we dubbed a lot of high strings, for instance, on the album, to level it out in the studio. Because then you get a sort of misty highs in the if you know it and you listen to it you say, that's what they're doing.
And then
ukuleles, mandolins, sitar,
yeah,
a lot of that stuff on it.
And Rob and I always found our way, you know, not always like right away, you know. It's like I had to search for stuff sometimes, so not to be in the way of Rob, you know. And sometimes I realize that I took over a little bit in stuff, but Rob talked to me about that and he was okay with that. Just he let me have this room, and but it is also like sometimes you have to just also because of all the harmonica information, you have to just go back a little and settle for like less. And it's fine because I was trying to approach the music always like the total, you know. It's not like, you hear me play this? I'm not like that. It's
Road Not Taken is a very good example of less is more.
Yeah.
That is a very, 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 very special song to me. Yeah.
So I came to this house, standing in the mud. She was talking to a man, the words I couldn't hear, they didn't know. Who my angel be? You're 17, still living. I'm standing here among my tears, not wanting to be seen. This is the road not taken, it's the highway I have crossed. But if I'm not mistaken, I'm...
During this period of 5 years, the Nits are a fantastic live unit that works a lot. They tour with Ting, they record the Da 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 album, and tour with this, record new songs for the Nest compilation, and tour once again on the back of this. And they also record a live album with a famous Dutch comedian, Freek de Jonge, under the name Fritz.
What I loved about playing with those guys is their ability of adjusting,
That was amazing.
I always compare to like playing baseball on a highway.
Milliseconds.
It's like the adjustment ability is where it's all about. We worked with Freek, you remember? Now, Freek de Jonge is not a singer. And sometimes he lost it, time-wise. So he had to wait like two more bars or something. He didn't. And he started singing, and the whole band went like, you know, just back. right behind him. And that's really, I think that's marvelous. Yeah. When a band can do that.
One guy can do it easily, two guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But five.
Five. Yeah. And we did that.
Yeah.
We succeeded with that. And it was
in front of 1,600 people.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And nobody noticed that there was
nobody
something.
Nobody noticed anything. Really.
No, well, yeah. Well, the real connoisseurs, of course, yeah, they
one
hear
or two
something.
Musicians.
Something is really weird.
The jazz police, probably.
Yes, the jazz police, yeah. Yeah. I remember a story about this part of Hank, you know, he is guts. And for me, coming from Matilda, every hit you do on the drum kit or a cymbal, you have to explain to her why it's there. Mm. And Hank is like, play, you know. And I remember we were in Nuremberg, you remember that? This big festival with a lot of people.
Yeah.
We closed the concert after two encores, I think. And then this guy, little guy with glasses, came and said, please, please play another really slow song because, you know, there's like 40,000 people want to go home. They are too excited. Can you do something? And we were standing behind the stage and Hank took his guitar and he went up the stairs, the first part. He turned around and said, let's do what we did.
Yeah.
And then he walked off and we looked at each other. What we did? What song is that? what song is that? And then Robert John said, you remember like 2 months ago, he let us hear like half a chorus of a song he was working on. He said, but there's no song.
The demo on a cassette tape?
No,
you remember?
It was just half it. And then we went up the stairs and there were all these people. And I felt really challenged by Hank because who does that?
Mm.
You know, a song that's not existing yet, we're going to play for so many people.
Yeah.
And I had to choose, am I going to play percussion or violin? A violin for me is the big challenge on such a moment because I need to rehearse stuff, you know, and compose. And I thought, okay, you do that, I do this. And then he started to play and Martin came up to Hank just to see what key you're in, Hank, you know. And Rob started some kind of a rhythm on the guitar and Robert John found the notes. And then I was just listening to the first chorus. And then on the spot, I composed like the violin line, which is on the record later, in the chorus, and then in the verses, I just like played along a little bit, like a second kind of line to the melody lines. And it was so weird because you cannot do such a thing normally. Like, I mean, I can't on a violin, but there was so much good energy coming from the audience, and like this weird daredevil Hank Hofstede. He just does something like that, you know. I never forget this because it's really, really special.
He's totally in his comfort zone when he's got a guitar around.
And he trusted the band.
Yeah, he trusted the band very, very deeply.
They'll come up with something, like, you know, like on the spot in that moment.
And he's never afraid of adventure or when something really goes wrong. He doesn't give a shit.
Well, yeah.
Really gutsy guy.
Yeah.
I don't want to sleep tonight. Outside it's raining. No one's complaining but me. I don't wanna talk today. No one is staying. Everybody's flying away. What we did. What we did. On a holiday.
Everybody was one at a time falling over from flu, except me.
Yeah.
I didn't catch it, which is strange because we were in very small rooms, barking and shouting and singing and partying and smoking cigars. Big cigars.
Yes.
Sometimes one of the technicians politely asked us if we could stop smoking cigars in the studio.
It's yeah. five people smoking yeah. huge cigars.
You know, it was like a tradition. I remember my son was born, Oscar, in 1993.
Imagine.
And we played in Amuiden yeah. with a theater. And
yeah, Peter brought cigars.
The guy from the theater really forbid us to cook inside because of the smell. What Tom did, you know, Tom, the lineman, he's like the fourth niece or whatever. And he got a roll of duct tape, and we were inside the table. And I remember we had to like make a party because my son was born, and I had like these big cigars. Everybody was there, and Tom just duct taped the doors and all the you know, so that nothing could go out. And then we started smoking. And it was so weird, Eric, because Hank was at the opposite of the table. I was sitting here, and Hank, very slowly, I saw Hank's head disappear in the fog, you know? It just came down from the top, this layer of smoke. It was really thick. And then this guy from the theater started to hit the doors. And,
what are you doing? What are you doing? It's forbidden.
He was really crazy. And Tom was really like, the duct tape didn't.
He was really mad at the fire brigade because the building was on fire.
Yeah, it was really. It was, but yeah, we had to celebrate. My son was born. That was tradition for the kids, you know.
But it does also look like an It's video, if you come to think of it.
Yeah, it was.
The video.
Yeah. Yeah.
Famous disappearing ink.
Yeah.
It was a guy's band also.
Yeah.
Boy band.
Yeah. Well, we did more. Eh? We also did a tour with Nest, you remember? That was not the last one.
No.
We did like this compilation album with a few new songs. We recorded. We toured a lot, of course. And well, I think in this period, Robert John also kind of felt that he had to do some solo stuff. That was happening.
I think he felt that there was not enough room in the Nits formula for his material.
Yeah, that's
He needed to explore his creative songwriting. And he's a bit of a peculiar guy, musically also.
Yeah.
He has a very strange rhythmic feeling. And an incredible harmonic presence.
Yeah.
You know, the things...
A lot of...
Sometimes I was looking at his keyboard because he had 15 different samples on one keyboard at one time for one song, just to cover all the sounds. Sometimes the C note wasn't under the C note, but under the E note.
Yeah.
He knew that, so he produced a C note by pressing the E note.
Yeah.
You know, because there was not enough room on his keyboard.
Right.
Can you just for 1 second try to imagine how his mind works?
Yeah. It's
no
fucking
way.
Amazing.
No way.
Yeah. But that's right, what you say. We started to feel that Robert John, you know,
needed some room.
He needed more room, you know, and I was there. And I did, like, a lot of coloring, you know, and I took my presence, and Martin did the basses, so his left hand was kind of not really necessary anymore in the sense of doing the bass parts. So he was kind of, his wings were a little bit cut off by us. And in the beginning, it worked fantastic, you know, but later on, we felt that it started to get a problem for him.
Yeah.
Well, he said at once that for him, this period with the quintet was like, during the time was like less interesting.
Step back.
Yeah, because he had to deliver room, space for us, you know. And it can be. I mean, I'm not going to judge him on that. Robert John is Robert John, and he wants to make his music on his way, and everybody should. And, you know, it was like. So the end was a little bit awkward in the end.
Yeah, it was a strange moment of separation also, that concert on the Dam Square. And we went to have a drink afterwards, and it was very quiet, and everybody was quiet. Nobody was talking much. Yeah. And we sat there for an hour and drinking the drinks, and
And then we said our goodbyes and went separate ways.
Are you sometimes surprised the path that those three ex-band colleagues have taken?
No, not surprised at all. No, no. Sometimes I wonder if they maybe would have been better off with a bass player in the band.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very important to have a separate person in charge of those the connections between Henk and Robert-Jan and Rob. I think Arwen did a very good job at playing bass,
Arwen,
by the way. And but after that, they sort of took another path. That's the only thing that that sometimes has me wondering.
Yeah.
But for the rest, I really love the songs. Still, Henk is very good. Maybe one of the better songwriters in Holland. I really love what he's making.
Martin. Did we talk about this bass thing? Because Rob always let me listen to the new material before it's like even recorded sometimes or like raw mixes. And my thing is the same. I am talking to Rob. So Rob, the bass part of the electronic basses with the drums, they don't fit. They don't sound well. You need a bass player. You say the same.
Yeah,
it's a choice, you know.
It's not the notes. It's just the same person. Like, the same person playing also, the lows and everything else.
Yeah.
You know, it's the curse of the quantization.
Yeah.
In modern music, like Apple Q and everything fits. You know, the same thing. You have to have conflict of interest in a band musically.
Yeah. To get some tension.
Yeah, to get something that's not really logical.
No.
You would probably have been the bass player after Robert-Jan and I left.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Could be, yeah.
I was walking in a town on the waterfront. I saw a building. I went inside into the dark. In the war and then
I remember I made a demo
yeah.
with probably all the songs that, yeah. that we recorded
yeah.
quite precisely.
Yeah.
And we just played that collection with some yeah. extras. But, yeah. but yeah. more or less, I checked it lately.
Okay.
More or less, it's the same. All the songs,
yeah.
they come back. And we just did it with a five piece. Of course, we changed it.
Yeah.
We made it bigger and things like this.
Yeah.
But I think that was the blueprint of the album.
Yeah.
And from there we worked. But it was a big project. I mean, we were in Studio One in Whistlelord.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we worked, of course, with Ati Bao.
Yeah. Yeah.
Engineer, producer, I don't know, more as an engineer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
we always wanted to be our own producer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's say it was maybe a very serious recording situation.
Studio. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But was it also yeah. the idea to make some sort of really sophisticated pop album? Because the others seem to have a different color altogether. So this time around, do the songs dictate that? Or how was it in that particular case?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the songs sort of dictated that. Mm.
And
they were complete songs, so the whole idea of what happened later is not on this album. That's also what I felt as a sort of disadvantage. Also why I left later, like when I feel replaceable.
He just chickened out.
But it's funny because when I listen back, I think it's a wonderful album, but. I thought we were becoming a too normal band,
yeah.
you know, with okay, the songs are okay, yeah, but and the band is really good, but like a real five piece man band, and smoking cigars I thought the adventure was a bit disappearing. I was very glad with Ting and I thought that this was for me in a sort of unexpected direction. But of course, every CD went into an unexpected direction. But this time, I wasn't as glad as with Ting maybe I was longing for something we do now. More than this.
Of yeah. course, there's less space when you are with five people. Music. You have to organize it more,
yeah.
and you have to yeah. arrange. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's more a serious rock ensemble.
Yeah. I really felt like a keyboard player.
Yeah.
That's the worst.
Yeah. But it was an adventure like
absolutely,
that.
Yeah.
And I still think that live, the five piece was a very, very great band. The sound we produced, the energy, I liked that a lot. But less experimental.
Yeah.
Less our personality, maybe, our soul.
Did we play also the whole Dada 2 with the big percussion setup? I don't remember that for sure.
Timpani and all the things.
We kept it because we kept on playing, of course, things from Ting. When you look at the stage setup, it was it was like that.
That allowed us on stage also to really sort of experiment and to come into different sounds.
That's probably
the sound was really interesting.
Yeah,
fantastic live band.
I think we all agree about that the quintet was really a nice unit.
Peter with the violin and Martin with the mandolin.
Yeah.
The color, he could do so many things.
Yeah. And the African type percussion.
Yeah.
Peter used a lot of African drums, which was a very nice sound, I think.
He described it as a playground.
Peter, very well.
Kindergarten.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree there. Yeah. Yeah.
Today we all went with our atomic friend to his forgotten land, close to the world's end. And Daniel said, "Ooh, like the river that runs to the sea. Like the highway that runs to the trees. And take your time on a river to the sea. Take your time.
Take your time. Take your time.
Like the whales back in Tadoussac.
I would like to reflect a little bit on what's on the album, because I think that's very important. Otherwise, the album sort of disappears. And there are some songs on it which are very, I think, quite exceptional in her whole career, and which I think what I like very much about them is the sort of optimism which is in Da Da Da, which I really liked. It had sort of easygoing flow, and it was really always when we played it later on, also as a trio, it always felt like sort of very, very nice. I liked very much all the songs of course, Mourir Avant 15 Ans, because it had this wonderful atmosphere described in Canada,
which I liked very much.
And one other one I liked very much was, of course, The Abandoned Mine.
But what you're saying, it's nice because the album is also connected to Canada.
That makes it nice.
Very interesting. It's a kind of a little travelogue, a souvenir travelogue, coming from Canada. The many moments we played in Quebec and Montreal. And that's what's
and the Tadoussac song, of course.
Runs to the
sea. Take your time.
Take your time. Take your time.
Take your time.
Take your time.
Like the whales back in Tadoussac. The whales back in Tadoussac. The whales back in Tadoussac.
Tadoussac. 1996 sees the release of the first best-of album of the Nits. Nest includes many of their most popular tracks from the past, plus two new songs, Road Not Taken and Broken Wing. In France, the same album comes with Broken Wing as Avec une aile cassée and the French adaptation of Adieu Sibanov, both sung with a guest star Kent. In concert, the Nits sometimes sing this song in English, sometimes in French, with or without Kent, and sometimes they even sing it in Dutch.
The man in the long jas stond te wachten op de nachtboot. De vrouw met de koffer en de tas keek opzij en dacht, daar staat de dood. De man in de lange jas tilde zijn hoed op en het was alsof een engel sprak, gevallen van het hoogste dak. En zijn vleugel brak. Door het ijs, de man met de koude hand vroeg, waar eindigt deze lange reis? De vrouw zei, aan de overkant, in Finland, maar waar bent u en wie bent u? Een stem uit de schaduw groet, ik ben een man die je maar één keer ontmoet. En zijn vleugel brak. Net als het ijs in de bevroren zee.
One is tempted to use the title of the song as a metaphor. Robert Jan Stips is about to leave the band, and thus One Wing is in fact broken. Moods have changed within the band, but it plays its last concerts in top form.
When they come to the Gorton Festival in Bern, they've played in Canada, in Senegal, at the Womat Festivals in Japan and England. This is one of the last concerts with Robert Jan, at least for the time being.
Once in a railway station, in the city where I live, the windows were like mirrors in this train. Once I opened the drawer, the room of a strange hotel, I saw this photograph of you. La Pinculta, La Pinculta. Out of the tree, I saw the moon when I was 15. Fell like a fire into the sea. Da 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 da. He smiled at me when he was 15. He turned his head and said goodbye. And when he died when he was 65, he left a hole in the sky. Da 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 da. Da 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 da
nada. Wir fahren, fahren, fahren auf der Autobahn. Und jetzt kommt ein Mercedes-Benz. Sie ist ein Model und sie sieht gut aus. And one day I'm gonna take her home. Maybe, vielleicht. I don't think so. Vielleicht nicht. Nein, 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 nein.
Merci, au revoir.
See you. Thank you.